Shri Radha Krishna Go Gopina Shaima Kunda Radha Kunda Giri Govardhana Ki Jai Vrindavan Dham Ki Jai Mathura Dham Ki Jai Navadvip Mayapur Dham Ki Jai Jagannath Puri Dham Ki Jai Gangamaya Jamuna Devi Ki Jai Bhakti Devi Ki Jai Tulsi Maharani Ki Jai Samaveta Bhakta Vrinda Ki Jai Gaur Premanande. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Sri Guru and Gauranga. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasai Budhume. Srimati Bhaktivedanta Swami Niti Namane Namaste Saraswati Devi. Gauravani Pacharani Nivasesa Sunyavani Paskajadi Satarani. Mandeham Sri Guru Sri Yutam Padakamam Sri Guru and Vaishnavamscha. Sri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunatham Vitam Sam Sajiva. Sadvaitam Sadvadutam Parijana Saita Krishna Chaitanya Devam Sri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Sri Vishakam Vitamscha. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
So it's January 2nd, 2010 in Bahrain. With the most serious, enthusiastic devotees, right? The people who got up in the morning after the New Year's program yesterday. And we're looking at Canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 3, Chapter 8, Manifestation of Brahma from Vishnu, Text 16 and 17. Tasyam chachambo ruha karnikayam avastita lokam apasyamana Parikramam vyomni vivritta netras chatrari lebe nudisham mukanti mukani tasyam. In that cha and ambaha water ruha karnikayam whirl of the lotus avashtitaha being situated lokam the world apasyamanaha
without being able to see
parikraman circumambulating vyomni in space vritta netraha while moving the eyes chatvari four lepe achieved anudisham in terms of direction mukani heads. Translation by Srila Prabhupada. Brahma, born out of the lotus flower, could not see the world, although he was situated in the world. He therefore circumambulated all of space, and while moving his eyes in all directions, he achieved four heads in terms of the four directions. Text 17. Lord Brahma, situated in that lotus, could not perfectly understand the creation, the lotus, or himself. At the end of the millennium, the air of devastation began to move the water and the lotus in great circular waves. Purport. Lord Brahma was perplexed about his creation, the lotus, and the world, even though he tried to understand them for one millennium, which is beyond calculation in the solar years of human beings. Does Prabhupada literally mean that it's beyond calculation? Does he mean that statement literally? But is this literal, that it's impossible for us to calculate? Yes. Some people say yes. Anybody say no? Does anybody say no? Are there places in Shastra where Prabhupada gives us the calculation?
Yes.
Does Krishna give us the calculation? In Bhagavad Gita, even.
Yes.
Okay. So, this is an important point. Because sometimes people say that every word of Shastra is to be taken exactly literally. And every word that Prabhupada says is to be taken literally. But if you take this completely literally, Right? Even though Lord Brahma tried to understand the creation, the lotus, and the world for one millennium, which is beyond calculation in the solar years of human being. If you take that beyond calculation literally, then what would be the problem?
Contradiction.
It'll be contradiction. Because in other places, Krishna directly in Bhagavad Gita is giving a calculation. And Srila Prabhupada, in many purports, is giving a calculation. So therefore, we should be careful. The Christians have a saying, the devil will also cite scripture. And Prabhupada quotes this, that you can use parts of the scripture, parts of the words of the acharyas, to prove almost anything if you pull it out of context. So if one really wants to understand the Shastra, if one really wants to understand Srila Prabhupada, the acharyas, one must read thoroughly. One should really read thoroughly all of Prabhupada's books. Also listen to Prabhupada's lectures and conversations, because Prabhupada's mood in preaching and lectures is a little different from the purports. The things that Prabhupada's emphasizing, and some of the things in Prabhupada's purports is practically never discussed in lectures, for example. In lectures, Prabhupada's giving his main emphasis. In the purports, he's giving everything. And conversations then are very much applying things to particular time and circumstance. So when understanding Shastra, we want to understand, first of all, in this particular context, what is what's being said mean in this story? And then we want to see, are there other places where things are said a little differently? If something is always explained exactly the same way in every place, then, but if it's explained differently, then one has to decide which is understood in terms of the other. Does this make sense? So you want mature understanding. Just because somebody can quote doesn't mean they're establishing the proper conclusion. Just because somebody can quote doesn't mean they're understanding the proper conclusion. And ultimately, to understand, it's not just a question of responsible scholarship, because what we're talking about now is just responsible scholarship. Even people in the universities and the academies understand that you must do that kind of scholarship. You can't quote out of context. You have to look at all the different places where something is referred to in order really to understand the mood and the will and the intention of the author. So even the materialists understand this. But beyond that, if we really want to understand the Shastra, if we really want to understand Guru and Sadhu, it's not simply a matter of intellectually being responsible and intellectually being thorough. What does one have to do to really understand? That we'll think as we go through this. So I'll start again. Lord Brahma was perplexed about his creation, the lotus, and the world. Even though he tried to understand them for one millennium, which is beyond calculation in the solar years of human beings. So we often feel like that, isn't that? I'm trying to understand myself. People take so many personality tests, astrologers, palmists, right? Numerology, to try to understand themselves and our world. What is the world? What is my particular sphere? No one, therefore, can know the mystery of the creation and cosmic manifestation simply by mental speculation. The human being is so limited in his capacity that without the help of the Supreme, he can hardly understand the mystery of the will of the Lord in terms of creation, continuance, and destruction. So Brahma, born out of the lotus flower, could not see the world, although he was situated in the world. So he was right there, but still he couldn't understand it. He therefore circumambulated all of space, so he traveled everywhere to try to understand. And while moving his eyes in all directions, he achieved four heads in terms of the four directions. Lord Brahma, situated in that lotus, could not perfectly understand the creation, the lotus, or himself. At the end of the millennium, it's interesting, Prabhupada uses the word millennium also. Millennium literally means what? Literally. Mil means what? Thousand. So millennium literally means 1,000 years. But it's not really 1,000 years, because if you look at the Sanskrit, it says yuganta. Yuganta means end of a yuga. So the yugas, if you take an individual yuga, they're all longer than 1,000 years. And I think it's a safe assumption to say this means one yuga cycle, not just one particular yuga. The one cycle of the four yugas, which is much, much longer than 1,000 years. But Prabhupada often uses the English word millennium, as a translation for yuga or even the four yugas. Just like Prabhupada uses the word incarnation for the Sanskrit word avatar. Incarnation. But actually the word incarnation, karna means what? Do you know? C-A-R-N-A. Talk about a carnivore. What does karna mean? No. Meat, flesh. So to incarnate would literally mean to take a material body. That's the literal English meaning of the word. So you find sometimes also Srila Prabhupada's not using... I'm just bringing this up because sometimes people want to minutely analyze, you know, like the Ritviks who want to say henceforward. That wasn't even written by Prabhupada, it was written by Tamal Krishnamurti. And they want to take some English word and minutely... Prabhupada wasn't sitting down like that and thinking, if I use the word millennium, people will think it's 1,000 years and then they'll get confused. If I use the word incarnation, though, you think Prabhupada has a, Krishna has a material body. He's not... It wasn't like that. So we shouldn't... To understand Prabhupada, it's not... That will not be sufficient. The end of the millennium, the air of devastation began to move the water and the lotus in great circular waves. So the real way of understanding Krishna, Krishna's will, here it says Brahma is trying to understand Krishna's will, is a little different than the process that Brahma initially takes up. First he takes up a process that doesn't work, and then gradually he takes up the process that works. So I think we can safely say that everyone in their own way is trying to understand the will of God for the creation, even the atheists, although they don't think of it that way. They don't think I'm trying to understand the will of God. But people are always wanting to know. The animals don't ask, the dogs and the cats and the birds. They're just concerned with where do I get food, where is a mate, is there an enemy coming? Right? And they're not thinking about what is the whole purpose of life, what is the purpose of the creation. But human beings are always asking this. What am I here for? And in the modern society, the brahmanas are the scientists, and the philosophy is that of nihilism. That simply we're matter, we have no soul. Almost like Buddhism, as far as the goal of life. The goal of life is nothing. We are nothing. There's one devotee lent us in the Gurukul one video called The Creation of the Universe. You're wondering, you know, who is operating the camera. And he says, when we look out into space, we can understand our origin and find it to be a cold, impersonal machine. That was the conclusion of the scientists. The cold, thinking how much Krishna would be offended. Could you imagine someone visits your house and looks at your house and says, I can understand that whoever designed this home is a cold, impersonal machine. You know, such an insult. But they have their theories. What are we? Who are we? Brahma's trying to understand himself. Their theories are that we're simply just protons, neutrons, and electrons. We're just electrical impulses. We are simply a machine. And none of the things that, none of our sense of identity, our emotions, our desires, none of them ultimately have any reality. They're just somehow electrical currents in the brain. And our very existence is just a chance result of innumerable cosmic accidents. What a depressing view of life. And you wonder why, with this society, so many people have mental problems. There's now so many people taking drugs for mental illness that the drugs are in the water. You know that? Now here you don't have to worry because you're just getting the ocean water. But most of the world, they're treating the water that people are using. And the chemicals come out in the urine and doesn't the treatment plants don't filter it. So in most of the world, people are drinking all these psychotropic drugs that people are taking for all this mental illness. And what to speak of crime? Why should anyone care about the environment? You know, everyone's saying environment. Why should you care if we're just machines? Then there's no meaning to anything. What's interesting is that people cannot live that philosophy. Nobody can actually live that philosophy. If you say that that's the ultimate mystery of the world, then really we should just be exploiting everybody. That's Darwin's idea, that the fit Exploit the weak, the fit take the resources from the weak die, and only the fit reproduce, correct? And this way everything improves. So why, in practically every human society, are there charity for the helpless? Why are you helping me with a broken foot? Why don't you just say, okay, now you've become weak, now starve. Who acts like this? How can any human society behave like this? Not possible. It goes against the very people who are preaching that we're simply machines and that life has no meaning. And the way for improvement is that the strong should exploit the weak to the point that the weak should die. And only the strong reproduce and take over the world. Those very same people are propounding programs to help the weaker section of society. Isn't that a fact? So this shows this philosophy cannot, if we can't live by it, how can it be the truth? If there's no way to put it into action, and as we've been talking the last few days, all of us have desires that cannot be fulfilled materially. Everybody. So there's so much evidence that that's not the right answer. And here Prabhupada is saying, just by speculation, you cannot come to the right answer. So let's think of it very practically. Let's say I want to go to a certain part of Bahrain. I want to visit somebody's house. Okay? So what do I need to get there? I've never been there before. What do I need? I need some directions. I need a map. I need some directions. And if I follow those directions perfectly and I don't get there, then what can you understand? It's the wrong directions. So where does everyone want to go? I mean, even the scientists, the psychologists, psychiatrists, they understand. Everybody wants what we were talking about the other day. Everybody wants happiness. Everybody wants life. Everybody wants knowledge. Here, Brahma's looking for knowledge. Everyone wants community. Everyone also wants autonomy. Everyone wants freedom, peace, harmony. Right? Some power over your own life. Some sense of understanding and mutual respect and appreciation. To do things of meaning and significance. Right? We could list the things that people, materialistic people have studied and they've made a list. These are the things that everybody needs, that everyone's looking for. So that's our goal. That's like the house you want to visit. Are you with me? So the house we want to visit is a house of happiness, relationships of love and understanding and mutual respect and appreciation, knowledge, life, freedom, power, peace, fun, play, adventure, excitement. Okay? That's the house we want to go to. But the map being given by the mental speculators, is it taking us there, either individually or collectively? That means it must be the wrong map. Must be. You cannot say it's the right map, but you don't attain your destination. And it's interesting that even the scientists will tell you that it's the wrong map. Can you imagine? You land in an airport in a foreign country and you say, I want to go to such and such landmark. And they say, here's a map, but it's not correct. Can you imagine that? So the scientists actually will tell you what's wrong with their map. Are you ready for something a little intellectually stimulating? This is a serious crowd, right? So I can... It's nice sometimes just to have the serious crowd, isn't it? I think it's in this book. Uh-huh. Okay. Of course, now they don't tell this to the people in general. The scientists don't advertise to people in general that they have the wrong map. When they're selling it in the map boxes, they don't have a big sign. This map is grossly inaccurate, and we don't even know which parts of it are grossly inaccurate. We just know most of it is. They don't say that to the people in general. You have to go up at least master's level in school before they'll start telling you these things. And then when you start to do your own research, before you start to do your own research, you have to take a class on what are the defects of research. Then they start telling you, by the way, We don't have the capacity to draw up a proper map of life, and we don't even know where our map is right and where it's wrong. You know, like in a child's game, you hide something, and when you go closer, they say warmer, 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 right? You've played that game? They don't even know. There's no voice from the sky going, you're getting warmer. They don't even know what part. So we'll look at the six defects of what Prabhupada likes to call mental speculation. Mental speculation is empiricism, trying to understand things just with your senses and your mind. Okay, ready? The first one is called the relativity of the light of reason. The relativity of the light of reason. That means what's obvious to me is not obvious to you. I'm sure you find this in your family. Husband and wife are having an argument, and one of them says, it's definitely like this. It's obvious. It's clear. Can't you see? And the other one is saying, no, it's exactly like this. It's obvious. It's clear. Can't you see? Right? And each person is convinced that what they're seeing is true. And the other person's vision is just wrong. We see this in the family. We see this in the in everywhere. Right? It's obvious. It's obvious. But it's not obvious to the other person. And therefore, what's obvious to me may not actually be truth. If it's not equally obvious to everybody, then maybe it's just relative truth. Maybe it's not really truth. The second one is called theory-laden perception. Theory-laden perception. That means when I look at things in the world, I already have some idea about meaning. I already have some idea about categories. And all what's coming into my senses, I'm not able to look at purely objectively. And there was a very famous card experiment done 1940-something, I think 49, 42 or 49, can't remember. I should write it down. You're all familiar with playing cards? They have diamonds, right? Red diamonds, red hearts, black spades, and black clubs. So they put some anomalous cards in. They put like red clubs and black diamonds. I don't know, 5 or 6 strange cards. Then they were showing this to a group of people. They'd show them the cards. And first they showed them very, very quickly. Name the card, name the card. And when they showed them very fast, nobody recognized that they were strange cards. If they showed a black diamond, either they'd say it was a club or they'd say it was a diamond. Do you all understand? Gradually, they were slowing down the rate at which they showed the cards. And at a certain point, most people would start to say, they'd hesitate. They'd say, oh, it's a club. They'd still put it in their pre-assumed category, but they were starting to feel a little uncomfortable. At a certain point, for 75% of the people, they went, oh, that's a funny card. But there were 25%, I think it was 25%, a certain percent of the people, they never saw the strange cards, no matter how slowly they were presented. So all of us do this. We don't even know we're doing this. We already have ideas about meaning. We already have ideas about categories. And when we see things, we fit them into the boxes we already have. Okay, the third thing is underdetermination of theory by evidence. Underdetermination of theory by evidence. This means that there's an unknown number of stories or explanations that can be given about any particular set of facts. So crime investigators know this. And if you've ever read any mystery stories, right, you get all the facts and you find out it's somebody else. And this happens sometimes. They think somebody's guilty and they're in prison for 20 years and then they find out somebody else did it. Isn't it? Right? The facts themselves do not suggest a particular story. Facts themselves do not suggest a particular story, and there are potentially an infinite number of stories that you could make up about specific facts. So how do I know that my story about the facts is true? And certainly this is true when it comes to human behavior. A simple example of this is a man goes to a restaurant. Do you know what a tip is? a gratuity we give like someone who works in a restaurant. So a man goes to a restaurant, and the waitress gets his order wrong. She brings him the wrong food. She spills the coffee on the table. And he's thinking, I'm not going to give her any tip. And as he's preparing to go, somebody walks up to him and says, I want to tell you, this woman has 5 children and her husband just died. So there's so many stories you can make about the facts, right? I'm sure we've all done this. I'm sure we've seen certain facts and we say, oh, it means this and this and this and this. One time I was talking to my son Keshava, and I forget what we were talking about. He said, Mata, are you completely sure? I said, yes, 100%. He said, are you sure? He asked me again, and then I stopped. I thought, he's knowing something. He's not telling me. I said, well, 95%. He started laughing. He said, well, you're wrong. It's like this. So how do you know that you've picked the right story? Because evidence itself does not suggest a particular story. The fourth is called the Duin Quine thesis and auxiliary assumptions, which means I don't always know what causes what, because there might be some unknown other factor. Of course, this is certainly true when it comes to the behavior of living beings. You can't know exactly what causes what. You know, in education, we're always thinking, okay, if you teach this way, if you use this method, you'll get it. But who knows? Is it the method that you're using? Is it the teacher's relationship with the student? Is it the student's genetics? Is it the student's relationship with their parents? Is it the books that those particular students use? How do you know exactly what's causing what? It's very, very, it's actually possible. You can't tell. There may be some other factor you're not seeing. And there's so much we're not seeing. There's rays of light we can measure with our eyes and some with machines, but suppose there's colors and times of light we can measure neither with eyes nor machines. And maybe those are having some effect, and we don't see that. The fifth is the problem of induction, and Prabhupada talks about this a lot. Induction is, you're doing this, you're doing this, you're doing... Okay, everybody's doing it. I look at examples and I make a theory. But maybe I haven't seen all the examples. So far, everyone who lives has died. But maybe someone living today will not die. How do I know? Some places it says the Pandavas went back to Godhead in their same body, so they didn't die. Somebody didn't die. In the Bible it says Moses and Elijah didn't die. So maybe there's someone who does. So what happens with theories, I make observations, 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 and I make a theory, and then after a while somebody says, oh, look, this is an exception. And after a while the exceptions get so great you have to change your theory. If any of you read Kuhn's book, Structure of Scientific Revolutions, a very difficult book to read, but worth it. And he talks about that all theories are only looking at a piece of the truth, because no theory explains everything. You get a theory that explains to some extent certain things, and then there's some anomalies over here you can't explain. And at first you just ignore them, or you try to explain them in the light of your theory, and if the anomalies get too great, you have to have a new theory. But it's not that your new theory goes like this. Your new theory goes like this. And now it explains these things, but it's not explaining these things. So it's not that people are coming closer and closer and closer to the truth. They're looking at different parts, like the blind man and the elephant. You know that story? Yes. So one says the elephant is a pillar, one says it's a fan, one says it's a rope, one says it's a wall. And the last one is called the social nature of scientific research. That our perceptions are colored by what's socially acceptable at a particular time and place. What we think is good, what we think is bad, what we think causes what, changes according to social acceptability. Just like when Prabhupada was young, it was very socially acceptable for 9, 10, 11-year-old people to marry, right? Gandhi was 13 when he married. Now people consider that an abominable thing. So how people interpret evidence depends upon what's socially acceptable, and that changes in time. So these six problems with empiricism This is taught by scientists. Isn't that coming from Shastras? This is coming from the scientists themselves. They're saying, we have no idea what the truth is. We have no idea. We have no idea what part of truth we're looking at. We have no idea if we're explaining it properly. I mean, with the problem of induction, if you're saying, well, I've looked at X number of cases, right? I've looked at 3,000 cases. And in all 3,000 cases, I've seen such and such. Therefore, such and such is possibly true or probably true. But they don't know what the probability is. You can't put a number on it. You can't say it's 75% true. You have no idea. Is it 2% true? Is it 90% true? No idea. So they're admitting all these things, and yet they have the audacity to say, here's a map of reality. If you follow this map of reality, you will get to your destination, which is happiness, knowledge, life, relationships of communication, appreciation, respect, understanding, autonomy, power, fun, freedom. If you follow this, you'll get there. Aren't they saying that? If you just follow our map, what's their map? Their map is you work hard in school, you get really good grades, you pass all the exams, makes you go to a good school with a good name, prestigious school, get a good job for a good solid company. Make a lot of money, work really hard, get a beautiful house, marry a compatible person, have healthy, intelligent children, send them to the good school, do some charity work, do some work for the benefit of the world, and then you'll die satisfied. At the end of life, you'll say, yes, I achieved fully my destination. Prabhupada says no one ever dies satisfied. That's their map. That's their map. And if you buy their map, then you'll give your energy to their programs, you'll give your time and your money to their programs, and they'll exploit you, and they'll make a lot of money, and they'll live that life, and they'll also be miserable. So if you really want to know the will of the Lord, if you really want to know the map to our objectives, you have to ask the architect. It's a pretty simple thing. Especially if you're in a situation where you can't guess. I was contacted the other day by one of my old friends from primary school, called me up to wish me a Happy New Year. And he said, I'm a materialist. It was really interesting. He said, you know, I'm just a materialist, Romila. He said, the only thing I trust is what I can perceive with my senses, even though I know that what I can perceive with my senses is almost totally defective. Oh, what a sad way of living. But he said, I don't believe it's possible to know anything more. And that's also what the modern leaders are saying. You can't know anything more. Yes, what we have is highly defective. We don't even know where it's defective. We don't even know how it's defective. But it's all you've got. Pretty sad state, huh? What are you going to do? Just commit suicide, practically. I mean, there's... what is the... That's what Sartre decided. He decided the only rational choice is suicide. But one can have a proper map. One can know the will of the Lord. One can know how to achieve the destination. Because the person who designed everything wants you to know. And he's made it very clear. This is how you achieve the destination. This is my will. Of course, we cannot know Krishna's will in the details. Then there's no fun. Krishna likes fun. Did you know that? He likes fun. We say, Advaita Machutam Anadi Manantarupam Ajam Purana Purusham Navayovanam Cha. Although he's the oldest, he's very young. You know, as we get old, we tend to get really conservative and stodgy and cautious. Isn't it? Generally. Generally. So though Krishna's very old, he's very young. It doesn't mean he just looks young. It's not that he has the mentality of a 5 billion year old man, you know, but he just doesn't need plastic surgery. He has the mentality of a young person. Like, how old are you? 15. You're 14. So Krishna's eternally about 15, 16. Yeah. So those of us who are older than that, you remember what it's like? What your mentality is, 15? 15-year-old boy. He likes adventure. He likes fun. And there's no fun if you always know the ending. Even Krishna doesn't, he likes not to know the ending. He likes to have his friends go into Agasura and say, now, what do I do now? Right? He enjoys that. He enjoys that. Just like people, the reflection of this is people go to movies, you know, action-adventure movies, where you know the hero's going to win. You know that Superman or James Bond or whatever, you know they're not going to be killed because they want to have a sequel. They're not going to kill the hero. You know the bad guys are going to be finished, right? Isn't it? But it's still exciting because you don't know exactly how. So Krishna likes excitement. He likes, he's wrapped up in Kaliya's coils. He's swallowed by Bakasura. Hiranyaksha knocks his mace out of his hand. Shalva knocks his bow out of his hand. Appears that Vasudeva's been captured and beheaded. It appears that Sita's been killed. There's no way to get over the ocean. He likes his adventure. He lets Hiranyakashipu slip out of his hand. Hiranyakashipu thinks, yes, I'm going to conquer. So even Krishna doesn't like to know all the endings. What to speak of for his devotees? Well, sometimes we think we want to know exactly how it's going to be. And then there's no fun. If you don't like fun and adventure, please don't worship Krishna. Right? I warn you, just merge into the Brahman, then there's no... You don't have to worry about these things. You can just always be shanti, shanti. Of course, it's kind of boring, just shanti, shanti, eternally, so you don't really stay there. But Krishna means fun and adventure. He likes adventure. He rides around, right, on this big eagle through the universe, taking different forms. So Prabhupada says no one can fully know the will of the Lord. Then there's no fun. And not only that, but Krishna's will is never going to be fully conceivable to a jiva. How can we fully understand? How can the child really understand the plan of the parents, a young child? Isn't that possible? You can try to explain, look, you're doing this for your own good, this is benefiting you, but you know, the child, isn't it? They can't really understand. Sometimes the little children even become angry with the parents. So, there has to be some trust. But in a general way, we can understand the will of the Lord because he tells us what it is. He tells us, how is the creation operating? They want their unified field theory that will explain everything instead of just little pieces. Krishna says the unified field theory is there's the three modes of material nature. That's how everything is working. And he says the purpose of the creation, Prabhupada says this is a mystery, the purpose of the creation is twofold. To facilitate rebellious souls and to reform rebellious souls, both. The very same things that facilitate sense gratification when used a little differently does not a thing when applied therapeutically cure a disease which is caused by that very same thing. So the very same things that entangle us when used for Krishna, like we were talking about last night, they regain their spiritual nature. So that's the will of the Lord. The will of the Lord is that we're all reunited with him in love eternally. That's his will. That's his plan. For unlimited, eternal, unlimited varieties of eternal play. Pastimes. Pastimes means something you do to pass the time. It's not a serious thing. Like sports, like watching sports. Watching sports has no value. It's a pastime, right? They'll say in America, baseball is the favorite pastime. So Krishna, just pastimes, just fun. That's his will. His will is that all living entities be eternally engaged in an unlimited variety of loving fun. That's full of freedom, that's full of peace, that's full of safety, but also adventure and excitement, right? Safe adventure. That's also why people like movies. You're safe in your seat and you get to have the adventures. Safe adventure. You know Krishna's not going to be hurt. You're not going to be hurt. You're a soul. But so much adventure. And real meaning, the real meaning and permanence. everything we want. Krishna's will is that we get everything that we want. But then you've got to follow the map. And the map is reestablish your relationship with Krishna. He's just waiting. When are you going to reestablish him? So that will we can understand. The exact details of what's going to go on with our life. Sometimes you may know, sometimes you may not know. Of course, sometimes even religious people, they want, when they say they want to know the will of God, what they really mean is, I want to know exactly how everything's going to work here so I can enjoy my senses. That's really what they mean. They want to use God like some expert astrologer. If I invest my money here, will I get a good return? If I marry this person, will I have, you know, unlimited happiness? And they're thinking, and we hear this even from devotees, is that Krishna's will. Thinking, if it's Krishna's will, then everything materially will turn out exactly as I have in my head. That's still, it's nice then you want to know Krishna's will. It's nice you're connecting with Krishna. But the mood is still exploitive. I want to use Krishna as my servant. Tell me how everything's going to work out so I can exploit it. First of all, Krishna's will doesn't always work out perfectly from a material point of view. That's the first thing. If you're going to have an adventure, it can't always work out perfectly. The hero sometimes has to get captured and then escapes, right? There has to be some conflict. You learn this in school. There's no story without conflict. It doesn't exist. You can't have a story, I get up, I brush my hair, I brush my teeth, I put on my clothes, I go to work, I eat meal, I go to bed. That's not a story. I tried writing one of those once in school. My teacher said, that's not a story. It has to be a conflict. So Krishna creates conflict even in Goloka Vrindavan. Right? Doesn't he? It appears Radharani's married to someone else, and is someone going to catch him? Is he going to get in trouble? I mean, how ridiculous. God is going to get in trouble? With who? He's the lawmaker. But otherwise, there's no fun. So even in this world, we're trying to become part of Krishna's story, trying to become part of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's story. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's pastimes are going on right now through ISKCON. We're part of that story. So there will be adventures, which means there will sometimes be conflict and difficulty and obstacles and things to surmount and victory. There's no victory if there's no conflict. If there's no struggle. Not this hard material struggle of pain and but the exciting struggle of adventure where you know Krishna is going to be victorious. Anyway, so Krishna's plan does not always work out from the external point of view. He tells the coward boys, go beg from the brahmanas, and what do the brahmanas do? What do they do? They didn't give anything. They ignored them. And the boys came back and said, how has nectar become poison? How have your instructions not yielded a result? Krishna says, that happens when you beg. But it was Krishna's will, because Krishna wanted to glorify the wives of the brahmanas. And they're more glorified in contrast with the husbands than if they were just approached directly. Therefore, it was Krishna's will that the coward boys failed. That made for a much better story. So the devotee, this is going to be scary, folks. The pure devotee is willing to be part of Krishna's story and play any role. Bhishma is willing to fight on the wrong side and be defeated as his service to Krishna. Because Krishna wants to show, even if you're Bhishma, if you're fighting on the wrong side, you'll be defeated. So Bhishma says, yes, Lord, I'll demonstrate that. I'll lose. Anybody like to lose? Who wants, especially someone like Bhishma? None of us want to lose. But, you know, he's a kshatriya, has the Ishvara bhava. People like that never want to lose, ever, to anyone, on anything. And he's willing to lose, to please Krishna. Yudhisthira is willing to be criticized for all time. Who gambles away his own wife? Even the most hardened gamblers, do they gamble their wife? Amazing, right? I met one devotee who told me before she joined the movement, she was married to a gambler. She said she finally left him and drove her crazy. She said one day they have a house and a car, and the next day they're home in a homeless shelter. You know? She said after a while, she said to her husband, I'm sorry, I can't live like this anymore. You're driving me crazy. But he never gambled her away. He gambled the house, the car, all the money, all the furniture, all the kitchen utensils. But at least he kept her. But Yudhisthira gambles away. And she's not just his wife. She was the wife of his brothers also. What business did he have gambling away his brother's wife? Right? But he allowed himself to do this because Krishna wanted to show how dangerous gambling is. That even Dharmaraj Yudhisthira, in the heat of gambling, completely lost his intelligence. So somebody won't say, well, I can gamble and I'll be. Yeah? Even Yudhisthira. So Yudhisthira is criticized. We rightly criticize him. And he's allowing himself to set the bad example. The Pandavas say, Krishna, if you want to exile us, Draupadi's willing to be dishonored for the will of the Lord. She's willing to play that role. Whatever role, Krishna, you want me to play, I'll play that role. Even in Goloka Vrindavan, there's people who are apparently opposing Krishna, like Jatila and Katila. Without that role, there's no fun. Like I was saying, I used to play Shripanaka. There's got to be, you know, the villain. So sometimes the devotees play that. The devotee is willing to do anything as long as it's part of Krishna's story and Krishna's happy. No? That's the will of the Lord, because their happiness is coming from that reciprocal loving exchange with Krishna, which gives them everything. Freedom, love, autonomy, peace, power even. Everything they want is in that. Therefore, they don't care about the externals. It doesn't matter than that. That's not where their happiness is coming from. Their happiness isn't coming from whether they externally win or lose, or whether Krishna's saying, play the good guy this time, or play the bad guy this time, or this lifetime I want to be a sage, this time be a kshatriya, this time be a man, this time be whatever. Okay, Krishna, whatever you want. Whatever you want. Narada Muni is an eternal brahmachari, but as Srivas, he gets married. Right? Whatever you want. You want me to play this role, Zagrahasta, Zagrahasta? Okay. Okay, Krishna. That they're, and they're willing to let the story unfold as Krishna wants it to unfold. And by doing that, one achieves the greatest happiness. One achieves everything one desires to the point that one says, you know, I really don't need anything else. So much so that one who has that service relationship with Krishna, when Krishna comes and says, what would you like? They say, nothing. I already have everything. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu asked Kolavija Shridhar, you know that story? When Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was showing that he was God, and he's asking all the devotees, what do you want, what do you want, what do you want? And then he says, call Shridhar. Who's this Shridhar? Nobody knew. He was this very poor man, very, very, very poor. He's living in this little hut, selling banana leaf cups and gourds. You know gourds? Squash? In Britain, squash is a drink. In America, squash means a vegetable, like zucchini. So he's selling little like zucchinis and little leaf cups. Not a very profitable business. It's not like being, you know, where's our eye surgeon? Is he here? He's not here, he's working. That's not profitable like that, or being, you know, an investment banker or something. He's not making much money. And he's using half of his money to worship the Ganga. Very, very poor. And then on top of that, when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was a boy, he'd come and steal his things. Or he'd bargain him down to nothing, so he would make absolutely no money at all. Oh, just see, this is the way of God. He wasn't giving him wealth, he was stealing his cups, bargaining, there's too much money. Is it called this Shridhar? So Shridhar comes, and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is there as Vishnu. He says, what would you like? He says, I'm completely satisfied. He said, I can give you rulership of a planet. What do I need that for? I can give you the 8 mystic perfections. What do I need that for? I can give you the wealth of Indra. What do I do with it? And Lord Chaitanya said, but I want to give something. You know, it's pleasurable to give something, isn't it? It's very pleasurable to give gifts. Nisingadev says to Prahlad, it's my pastime to give benedictions. At the end of every prayer, one's supposed to ask for a benediction. That's the etiquette. Because Krishna is very happy to give presents. Do you all like to give presents? Do you like to give presents to your friends? It's fun, isn't it? So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, I want to give you something. You must ask for something. He said, okay. Birth after birth, you please come as a charming Brahmin boy and you steal my cups and zucchinis. You come and harass me over the price. Let's play that game forever. So that is how pleasurable it is to have that reciprocal relationship with Krishna at every moment. That is so pleasurable. It is so satisfying. It fulfills all of our needs, all of our desires, everything, to the point that you just say, I don't need anything else. Like the way you all feed me, you know. You give me so much, gets to a point, I don't need anything else. Oh, now here someone's come with another preparation. I don't want it. Even if it's my favorite preparation, I'm satisfied. And this satisfaction of the devotee is always increasing, 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 increasing. So that is the will of the Lord, that we engage in that. That is the purpose of this creation. That's the purpose for anything. That's the purpose for we exist. That's His will. And that will can only be known through revelation. One cannot understand this will of the Lord just by mental speculation. It's not possible. What to speak of understanding all the permutations of material nature? It's too complex. And our senses are so limited. So Brahma will come in the forthcoming verses to meditate and understand this will of the Lord. And we are so fortunate, although we are of nothing near the intelligence of Brahma. I mean, there's not even comparable. He engineers the universe. You know, I'm lucky if I can engineer some nice subji or an automobile or an air conditioning unit, you know. I cannot engineer the whole universe. And still, this is being revealed to us. And not just theory, pratyakshavagamam jarmam. We directly perceive. We should be directly perceiving this, my dear friends. Should be directly perceiving that having this reciprocal relationship of service with Krishna is the most satisfying thing. In the beginning stage, we might just get little glimpses from time to time. But we should see this, the quality, the nature of that reciprocation is different from anything material and fully satisfies us. So thank you very much. I think tonight is my last class, and we're going to be talking about chanting. So should I stop now, or questions, or what? Okay, till what time?
10 minutes.
10 minutes, okay. Any questions, comments? Yes, Prabhu.
In your class, you said that we have been caught into this material world for some kind of facility of sense gratification and the rectification of our senses. And we are full of deficiencies in our senses. And your sadhana, how we can hope to have some amount of light so that we are going in rectification? Are we totally in the enjoyment, or are we going in the rectification direction also?
Well, everybody who's here has already started in the rectification direction. As soon as you say one time, my dear Lord, from this day on I am yours, then you're already started in that direction. How long it takes is up to you. But your question is, what is our hope? Is that your question? Are you feeling helpless and hopeless? By ourselves, yes, we're helpless and hopeless. That's a fact. But there are some things we can do. So this is explained in the 10th canto, 2nd chapter, by the demigods. They say this material world is like a great, what?
Forest fire.
Well, it is a forest fire, that's said elsewhere. But also like a great what?
Cobweb.
A web? Yeah, sometimes it's also explained like a spider's web. Uh-huh. Yes. So we have forest fire, spider's web.
Ocean.
An ocean. I'm thinking about ocean. The others are all true also. So they say it's like a great ocean. Now, even you go here, you're by the Arabian Sea, correct? Arabian Sea is not so big. But still, can you swim? Does anyone swim across the Arabian Sea? I don't think so. People swim across the English Channel at the Pas de Calais. If you look at a map, the Pas de Calais on a map looks very tiny. But that's only the most expert open water marathon swimmers can swim the English Channel at the Pas de Calais. What to speak of Arabian Sea? Let's just speak of the Pacific. Have you seen the Pacific Ocean? Anyone here seen the Pacific Ocean? No? Anyone seen the Atlantic Ocean? You've seen the Atlantic. Pacific Ocean is very, very big. Very, very big. Is there any hope of crossing the Pacific Ocean by swimming? You can't do it. You feel overwhelmed, isn't it? You know, the material world is just like the Pacific Ocean. And if you look at it and say, you can't do it. Why? It's Krishna's energy. The materialists have some energy. They can create some movie or video game where you feel that you're part of the movie. You almost forget yourself. Right? Is that correct? But you still remember a little bit while the person's playing the computer game, while they're watching the movie. They still have some memory that they're not really part of that illusion. But here it's so perfect that you almost forget completely. Every once in a while you just think, oh, something funny's happening here. Something's wrong. So big. How can you cross it? So the demigods say there is a way to cross it. How did they say you cross the ocean? What is there to cross the ocean? Do you want to cross the ocean? You need a boat. So there's a boat. But they say there's a funny thing about this boat. Very funny thing about this boat. All the sadhus have used this boat to cross the ocean. But what is the funny thing about this boat? It's always on this side. Right? If you take a boat to cross the boat must go to the other side. So sometimes it must not be there. It will be at the other side. But this boat never stays from this side. Why? Why does it not go? Why does it stay? Because as soon as you approach the boat, you never have to get in the boat. Nobody gets in the boat. As soon as you approach the boat, what happens to the ocean? It becomes a tiny little puddle. Tiny, tiny, tiny. No. 8-10 centimeters across. Goes from the Pacific Ocean. We look out at our attachments, our desires, our lack of Krishna consciousness, and we see this big ocean, and we feel afraid. And we think, and we feel hopeless, and we feel overwhelmed. And out of our hopelessness and fear and overwhelm, we don't approach the boat. And as soon as you approach the boat, gone. And we've all had this experience with some things. Just like when people first take up Krishna consciousness, a very common thing. In fact, it was discussed 2 years ago, right in that room. I remember one young lady was saying, if I take up Krishna consciousness, then what will happen to my friends? How will I be able to keep my friends? Because some of my friends are not favorable to Krishna consciousness. I want to have friendship and I want to be a devotee, and I don't know what to do. And for her, that was a Pacific Ocean. Right? I think most of us, unless you have all favorable family and friends, I think most of us had this experience with at least one person in our life, where we wanted to keep our relationship with that person and we also wanted to take up Krishna consciousness. And we didn't know what to do. It was a Pacific Ocean. And after some time, that becomes this big, isn't it? I was thinking, this is not a problem for me anymore. It was a problem. There was a time when it was a problem. There was a time when I thought, how will I deal with this? How will I become a devotee of Krishna when I have friends and family members who are not supporting it? It will be impossible. I'll lose some. I won't have any friends. Just imagine. Just see how I was thinking. I won't have any friends anymore. If I become a devotee, my friends won't like me anymore. They won't want to be with me. This was my fear. Just see how many friends Krishna is giving me. Thousands and thousands of friends. few years ago, I went to Russia for the first time, and I'm thinking, I'm flying to a country where I know only one person. The only person I met from there was Bhakti Vigyan Maharaj. I thought, I don't know who's picking me up at the airport. I don't actually know them. I mean, I have a name written on a piece of paper so I can tell the immigration person. I don't actually know this person. Never met them. I don't speak the language. And you go there, and there's immediately 3,000 friends. Just see. Prabhupada talked about that. He said how, you know, he said, I was afraid to give up my family life. He had five children. Actually, he had more, but only five lived to maturity. He said, but now Krishna's given me so many sons and daughters. So the Pacific Ocean becomes this big. You think I won't get any friends? If I take up Krishna consciousness, I won't get any friends. But when you actually do it, you find your fears are not founded. Not only are you able to survive, but you get thousands and thousands of times more than what you gave up. So all of our fears are like that. All of the ways in which we think, how will I do it? How will I give this thing up? If I give this thing up, then there'll be this problem, and that problem, and this problem, and that problem. Right? If I become detached, then I won't care about anybody anymore. I won't take care of my family. I'll become irresponsible. I'll become hard or whatever. All these fears. So we don't approach the boat, and we're just looking at the ocean. That's a big ocean. I'm going to drown in that ocean. I'm not advanced enough. You just approach the boat. Just approach the boat. And you see it's nothing. It's actually nothing. It's a big ocean is Maya. Maya means that which is not. Mam eva prapadyante. I am Avan Tarantite. As soon as you approach the boat, you don't even have to get in the boat. You just approach the boat. And it's gone. It's only hopeless when you're holding back. The hopelessness, the helplessness, the overwhelm is only when you're holding back, and then it looks like a Pacific Ocean. It's not. It's just this. Anybody else? Yes,
Prabhupada. Once the entity have re-established the relationship with Krishna, is there anything to arrest the reason for which we got separated from Krishna?
Yes.
And will be any time there in Goloka Vrindavan? Huh?
Prabhupada says yes. And you will see. You will see the reason. That will become clear when we're ready to see. The reason it's hard to see is because seeing that reason requires very deep humility.
It's a lack of humility because of
100%. 100%. The reason that it's inconceivable to us that we have fallen is pride, 100%. But you can't force somebody. Therefore, you can't really explain it. Have you ever talked to someone who's too proud to understand something? Have you ever tried to explain something to someone who's too proud to hear what you have to say? It's hopeless. It's useless. They can't understand it. It's a waste of time. Right? So therefore, this subject of how we fail is not understandable until we attain a certain level of humility. It's just not understandable. It makes no sense to us. What's causing it not to make sense is this veil of pride and fear. We'll discuss that a little bit tonight. Yes, Prabhu.
Mataji, as a sequel to what Gopi Prabhu's question, we have so much of tons of arathas with us. Achieving Krishna prema appears like a mirage, or, you know, without so much entanglement and all that. How do we keep our enthusiasm for the target?
Do you have a degree? Do you have a degree?
Yes, sir.
Bachelor's, master's, PhD, what level?
Graduate level.
Graduate level. In what subject?
Physics, chemistry, mathematics.
Physics, chemistry, math. Easy subjects, right? How many years did you go to school?
12 plus 3.
How did you stay enthusiastic? How did you stay enthusiastic? Was it always easy?
It's pretty long time I've had to.
Try to remember. Was it always easy?
It wasn't, of course, yes.
Sometimes did you think you might not get your paper done on time? And sometimes you thought you might fail an exam?
Yes.
Why did you keep going?
Well, there's nothing else we had in.
Some people don't get a degree, and they're living. There are so many people on the planet that don't have any education. They're eating, they're sleeping, they're mating and defending. They have their home. Some of them even, I met one gentleman, actually, who was illiterate, and he was very wealthy. Person. In fact, you all know him, although he's not here right now. So there are very wealthy and successful people who don't have educations, isn't it? Okay. So there were choices. You could have dropped out. You could have quit. Nobody had a gun to your head. Nobody said, I'm going to shoot your mother if you don't finish. So how did you keep up your enthusiasm? I mean, that's a material thing. That you're not even sure after which, when you attain it, you're going to get what you want. You may get your degree and still be unemployed. Happens.
Yeah.
So how did you keep up your enthusiasm? It wasn't even 100% sure. Wasn't 100% sure you were going to finish?
Yes.
Right? And wasn't 100% sure that after you finished, you would achieve your desires. How did you keep up your enthusiasm? Think about it.
That was a compulsion.
Who was compelling you? But so many people have jobs and looked after family without education, aren't there? Haven't you met people who look after their family without education?
Maybe better job.
Maybe.
Yes, better jobs, more money.
Okay, I'll tell you. Well, you all remember Chowdhury, who was living in Qatar? Did you know him?
Yes.
He could hardly read and write. Did you know that? Very successful man. Correct or not correct? Very successful. You say compulsion, but there's choice. There's choice. So why did you do it? You're convinced that if I do this, I'll get what I want. Where's that conviction coming from? Where's it coming from? Is it absolutely true? No, it's not absolutely true. There are people who get their degree and don't have a happy, successful life, and there are people without a degree who do. Everybody knows that. But what gives you the enthusiasm? Where does it come from?
Because majority of these people achieve success and...
Okay, so you're hearing from so many people. You're saying, where's the compulsion coming from? It's coming from your parents, probably? Probably from your parents. I mean, from the time I was a little girl, I understood I'm supposed to go to university. Nobody said, you can go or not go. It was not a discussion. Of course you're going to go. Of course, later then I left to join the movement, which my mother did not like very much. Shiva Ramar's left his bachelor's degree 2 weeks before graduation to join the movement. Can you imagine? He said his mother almost went into the mental hospital. So our parents are telling us, and they're natural authorities, so we believe them. Who else is telling us? The teachers in our primary school, secondary school. Who else is telling us?
Friends.
Who else?
Relatives.
Government is probably making also propaganda. And these are all our authorities, so we believe them. And of course you see generally people who don't have an education have difficulty having a high quality life. Generally. It's not absolutely true. But generally. So how do you keep up your enthusiasm in anything? You have to have the right association. Therefore we have the Sangha. So much trouble. The devotees who are taking care of this it's a lot of trouble. This is not a small job. Taking care of this building and cooking all those meals and getting all those banana leaves. Making sure the deities are dressed every day and all the artiks and putting out all the mats even and picking up all the mats and getting the camera and, you know, bringing people like me here. I mean, that's not a small thing. It's a big thing. It requires a lot of people, a lot of coordination, a lot of management, a lot of dealing with people's false egos and conflict. And right? Why are they doing that? Just so that there's people who are saying, go for it, go for it, go for it. And then just like you look at the people who have the degree and you see that generally speaking, they have more of what you want than the people who don't, generally. So you should look at people who are, you look at the graduates of Hare Krishna consciousness. At least you can look in the Shastra. What are they like? And you decide, I want to be like that, and it's worth it. And yes, sometimes you're going to fail an exam, Hare Krishna. Sometimes you're going to not know if you're going to get the paper done on time. You know, sometimes you have other students in the class who aren't very pleasing. Sometimes there may be a professor that drives you crazy. Right? But you do it. You make it, that's the idea of initiation. Initiation, you say, I'm here. It's like getting married. I'm here. Here I am. If a day after the marriage, your wife gets in a car accident, gets burned over 90% of her body, and is an ugly invalid for the rest of her life, you're there. Yeah. That's the deal you're making. I'm here. Now, when people get married, you don't know. Do you know? You don't know what adventure is going to be in store for you. You don't know. Yeah, I'm here. I just speak of when you have a child. At least you get to be introduced to your spouse usually before you get married to them. But you don't get to be introduced to the children you're going to have. Yeah, how do you know? You say, I'm here. Here I am. I'm not quitting. Now, if we can do that for marriage and we can do that for children, we do that for a degree. When I went to get my graduate degree, because my undergrad I had started and stopped many times. I stopped to move into the ashram, then I did another year, then I stopped that, then I finally finished the last 2 years. So I told Krishna with my graduate degree, I said, I'm not quitting. I said, if you make me quit, that's your business, you know. If you hit me with a truck or something, you know, that's Hare Krishna. But I'm not going to quit. And you make that determination, and then you don't quit. And there were many reasons to quit. Right? And then at one point, at the very, 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 very end, I was at the very end, 3 months to go only. 2.5 months to go. So one of the professors on my dissertation committee, he never read my proposal. He approved my proposal without reading it. And now at the last minute, he actually read the dissertation. And he said, you did a more complex study than you really needed to do. And he was right. He was right. It was more complex. I could have done something half as complicated and still graduated. He was right. He said, embedded in your last two research questions are actually, each of those research questions looks like one, but it's each one is actually 200 questions. He was right. I said, I know. I did all the tables. I did all the statistics. I know how many research questions it was. He said, you know, why are you making this so hard on yourself? Why don't you do simpler research questions and do a different study? I was ready to defend in 1 week. And he said, start all over. He's giving me another year's worth of work. And not because there was anything wrong with what I did. He just said, why are you taking so much trouble? But I already took the trouble. It was already over. There's a story I learned as a child of these fools. And they wanted to build a mill in the river at the bottom of a mountain. So they cut the trees on the top of the mountain and they carried them down. And after they carried them down, somebody said, you've taken so much trouble, you should have rolled them down. So they carried the trees back up the mountain and they rolled them down. So that's what this professor was telling me to do. He was telling me, take one more year and do your research completely over from scratch. And that was one of the most austere and difficult things I ever did in my life, was that research. And then I literally laid on the floor and I cried. And I said, Krishna, I told you I wasn't going to quit, but I can't do this. I can't do it. I can't. I just don't have the determination to do this. And I cried for like 20 minutes, and then I thought, but you promised. But you promised, Krishna, you weren't going to quit. So you can't quit.
Hare Krishna.
You know? But I did cry for 20 minutes. And then I got up and I called the chairman. And I said, look, I can't do this. Help me. You got to help me. Because first he's saying, I'm not going to help you. I said, if one person on the committee wants me to do it over, will the other professors do it? He says, well, if he insists, yes. And then I called him. I said, please help me. He said, okay, come to the office. And we're working like 3-4 hours. And I said, you're here a long time. He said, I'm going to stay till it's done. Will you? I said, yes. No. And we solved it. So there will be times. There will be times. No. There will be times when you'll say, I can't do this. That's okay. That's okay. So I'll end with one little story. I'll teach you a little mantra. All right? Want to learn a mantra? This is one of my favorite stories. So some of you know I'm working on this learning to read project for the children. So this has been my mantra through this project. So, you know, Krishna wanted Jarasandha to be killed, correct? The messenger from the kings came and they said, Jarasandha is imprisoning us, please rescue us. And Krishna says, yes, I will rescue you. Notice it didn't happen right away. Krishna says, yes, I will rescue you. Like Krishna's killing Kamsa, but he kills Kamsa 20 years after the prophecy. He says, yes, I will rescue you. But then Narada came and said, Maharaj Yudhisthira wants to do the Rajasuya, and killing Jarasandha can be part of doing the Rajasuya. So they go to Hastinapur. Going to Hastinapur was not a small thing if you have 16,108 wives. So imagine you have one wife and two children. What it's like to travel, you know? And then they're not traveling by car. They're really carrying palanquins and so many servants. So it was a big thing. Just they're going all the way to Indraprastha. Then they go there. Then Maharaj Yudhisthira talks about the Rajasuya. Then he sends out the brothers for 1 year. They're conquering everybody except Jarasandha. So probably like a year and a half later. Okay, we're going to go to Jarasandha. And the plan, I think it was Uddhava's plan, that Krishna, Arjuna, and Bhim would dress up as brahmanas and ask for charity. And Krishna, either was Krishna's plan or he approved the plan. All right, so you're with Krishna. You're with God. He's standing right next to you. Right next to you. And he's telling you, this is what you're to do. Kill Jarasandha. So you think, if God is standing next to me, telling me to do something, it will be easy. But it wasn't. How long were they fighting, you know? How long were they fighting? 1 month. A lunar month they were fighting. Every day they'd fight, and every night they'd stay as the guests in Jarasandha's house, and then the next day they would fight. So first, Bhim's very enthusiastic. When you first start Krishna consciousness, you're very enthusiastic. Yes, I'm going to become a self-realized person in about a week. Maybe a month. After all, I'm already so elevated. So, you know, Bhima probably thought it was going to be a pretty easy job. I mean, he was pretty strong. He killed that Bakasura pretty easily and Hidimba, right? But he couldn't do it. He couldn't do it. He tried and he tried and he tried. Krishna's right there next to him, and it's Krishna's order, and still he couldn't do it. So then what does he do? He says, Nashaktoham Jarasandham Nirjetam Yudhimadava. Want to learn this mantra? Na shaktoham jarasandham nirjetam yuri madhava. Na shaktoham jarasandham nirjetam yuri madhava. Na shakto. I don't have the shakti. Na shaktoham. I don't have the shakti. Jarasandham nirjetam yuri. Jetam means like jai, victory. Nirjeta. I can't get victorious. Yuri is in battle. I can't be victorious over Jarasandha in battle. I don't have the shakti to be victorious over Jarasandha in battle, O Madhava. Na shaktoham Jarasandham nirjetam yudhi, Madhava. I don't have the shakti. Who of us has the shakti to conquer Maya? We don't. We make the, but you have to make the effort. You notice Bhim didn't say this immediately. Krishna tells you to do it. He says, Nashakta Om Dharasandam Nirjaitam Yudhi Madhava. Remember, Krishna likes stories. Please remember this. So then, Apyayam Swena Tejasa. Swena Tejasa. Tejasa's power. Krishna then invested Bhima with his own power. And not only that, he did something else. What else did Krishna do? He took a grass and he broke it. He also likes doing that. It's so much fun, you know? Don't you like it when you have a friend that you just say a little something and they understand what you mean? Isn't that fun? Or you just, you know, look so they understand immediately. That kind of harmony. Isn't that fun? So much fun, huh? When you can finish each other's sentences, you just say one word and they get it. Krishna loves doing that. He loves speaking in with double and triple meanings. You know, he's often talking to the devotees just with the movements of his eyes, and they understand, okay, we're supposed to meet you over there later on, 11:30. Okay? So he didn't say to Bhim, oh, by the way, Jarasandha was born in two pieces, and he was joined by a witch, and therefore, if you split him in half, he'll die. He didn't outline it, just invested him with his power and hint. So when your enthusiasm wanes, it will sometimes it'll be hard. Sometimes you're trying to kill that Jarasandha for 28 days, you know, and you're not getting anywhere. And it's the order of Guru and Krishna, and they're right there, and they're still not. Shaktam Jarasandham Jaitam Apyayam Swain Tejasa. Please invest me with your potency and give me a little hint. Give me a little hint. Okay? Is that all right? Thank you, all glories to Srila Prabhupada.
Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna.